We're reading Bamidbar, chapter 21. As I've mentioned, or I might have not mentioned, so I'll give this preface to this chapter and many of the chapters or the stories in this part of the book. As we've said, this is sort of the third part of the narrative, the third part of the chronology. If we say the first part is the first year, the establishment of the Mishkan and the camp around it. Second part would be the beginning of the travel through the Midbar and the complaints and stories that have to do with it. And the third part is the end of the travel through the Midbar and the wars and also complaints and tests and challenges that happened with that. And as we saw yesterday, we already had the deaths of the two of the three main leaders of the people during this first generation, all the way from Mitzrayim, which are Miriam and Aharon. So we're left only with Moshe, so to speak. And of course, Moshe's death was already talked about in the previous chapter. Right? Moshe is going to die in the desert, not going to take them into Eretz Yisrael because of the sin of Memeriv. So we're very clearly at the turning point of the new generation. But we still have some parts to go through, some stories and even some conquests and some successes of Moshe at the threshold of the land of Canaan, the land of Israel. So we hear certain successes and certain not fully successes. And as we'll see, I think one the best way to look at all these stories is that many of them are fragmentary. We have very little information. Of course, like, for example, the beginning of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? The Parshas Sefer Shemos is at length the story of Moshe overcoming the challenges of Mitzrayim and all the Ten Makas and all of that. The whole story of the establishment of the Mishkan and the camps around it were told to us in great length. There's no detail missing, or even many details that we think are superfluous. They're extra. There's a huge amount of detail. But when it comes to this, very in particular, this part of the story, the last few wars that Moshe fought, the last few stories that happened, there's something very, very fragmentary in the way that they're told, in the way that they're recounted to us. We're missing sort of most of the narrative. There's even explicit references in this chapter, and possibly in some other chapters, to some books or some sources which apparently have more of these narratives and more full, but we don't have those books, or we don't have those writings or those songs or those sources, so we're kind of missing the main context, the main part of narrative of the story. We have only like little parts, but this is what we're going to read. So the first thing is we hear another war with the Canaanite, the king of Arad. Arad is somewhere to the south of Israel. Of course, the Eden are somewhere there. Not clear when this happened. This is something we have solved, something very similar already in the end of Parsha Shlach, when the Meraglim went, and Vaknani Yoshev Banegev, and Arad is Banegev, and they fought with the people, the Ba'apilim, that went up to the land after the Meraglim, after they decided that they will go. And this might be some repeat or some version of that same story, or just another thing that happened again. In any case, he hears that the Knani who lives in Negev, the Melech Arad, this is the exact Knani that we discussed, hears that the Yisrael came Derech Asurim, so some way over there called Atarim. This is some way or some place where they went. And he comes to fight with them. And he captures some captives. So apparently he was successful, at least in his initial battle. He captures some captives from the Israel. So there's a problem. And therefore, in response to this crisis, what they do is something we see very many times, not so much in the Chumash, but many times in Tehillim and Tanakh. What one of the things someone does in a crisis is he makes a neder. He makes a promise. Of course, we've read in the stories of Kabbalah many times the concept of a neder, and as I've told you then already, the main concept of a neder is when someone is in a crisis, someone is in a tzura, someone is in a situation that is hard, he promises Hashem that if he will get better, if we'll get out of this, he will bring a carbon, he will do something for Hashem. So Israel, in general, the collective makes a neder, and they say, if you will give this people in my hands, this is kind of karma. So we'll see in Sefer Yeshua something similar, the concept of a cherem. In other words, I will not take it for myself, I will give it to you, I will give it like we learned earlier, halachas of a cherem, kol cherem b'Yisrael, l'choyeh, goes to the Kehanim, it goes to the Mikdash, and so on. That's saying, and that's going to be the fulfillment of their pledge, of their neder to. And Hashem listens, v'yishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael, a very nice pasuk, We have a lot of times we listen to the Kol Hashem, but Hashem listens to the voice of the people, and He gives Vayitan Esaknani, and in other words, it's implied the Yotam. They win the battle, and they make a Cherem for the Kanani, for their cities, and that's why this place is called Charma. The interesting thing is, of course, that Charma was the exact name of the place where the Kanani fought the battle and won against the Ma'apilim. The name of the place is mentioned in other places also, so there's some complication with this word Charma. There might be more than one place called Charma, named after the same idea of like Charma being the place where a Cherem was made. It's obviously a name. It's giving this name a reason that it was called Charma, because this place was called Cherem, because it was an edit that the people made. So that's one very fragmentary report. It's not clear what this war is about. I mean, obviously later they're going to go into Eretz Canaan and Sefer Yeshua and conquer also this Canaan. It's explicitly mentioned, if I remember, Melech Arad or Melech Charma. So there's something interesting about this story. There's Midrashim that tried to deal with what's going on here and fill in some of the background and tell us what's happening, but that's what the report that we have here. Now we have one more story of a problem, of a complaint, and a very interesting response. So we've discussed several models of the complaints and the response that the Hashem has, or Moshe has, to the complaints. What we have here is a new kind of model, or maybe the most similar to what we happened after Parshas Korach, when there was a Magaifa, and Moshe had we could call it something like a Sgula, some kind of technique to solve the problem. He told the Hanan to bring Ketores, and here also we're going to have a solution. Hashem is upset, and therefore causes a problem, and Moshe doesn't just do tshuva, or doesn't just beg Hashem to relent. He has a certain solution, some kind of technical solution to the problem, and of course, everyone knows the Mishnah and Rosh Hashanah that discusses what kind of solution this might be, to reinterpret it in moral terms, but that's what happens. So what happens is, they go back from Hoyt Har. Now remember, they were in Hoyt Har, that's where Hashem died, and they have to go back to go around Edom, because Edom doesn't let them go through. But Tikta Nefesham Badarich, the Nefesham becomes short. In other words, they become tired. They become maybe thirsty and hungry, but they become tired from the way. They don't have any more patience to go through. The way is getting longer and longer here, right? They're faced many obstacles and setbacks. And therefore, they speak about Lehim Hashem and Moshe, their leaders, so they're complaining against them, and they have their regular complaint that they always have. Why did you bring us out of Mitzrayim? We're going to die in the desert. There's no bread, there's no food. Yes, we have some here. They admit that they have some food, apparently the man, but similar to what they complained about the man in Parshas Bahalos, our souls, our bodies, our persons, is already fed up with this not good bread, with this spoiled bread, or not good bread. And Hashem, in response, sends nechoshim srafim, so strong snakes. Srafim, many times over here, means a snake. It's a snake that burns, something like a poisonous snake, something like venomous snakes. And they bite the people, and many die from these snakes. Of course, we're going to see in Sefer Devarim, this is one of the very clear attributes of the desert, that there's venomous snakes in it. Nechoshim srafim, nechosh srafim akrav. That's the kind of animal that you find in the desert. But obviously, this was in response to their complaints that the desert is a bad place, so they got from the problems of the desert. Now the people come to Moshe and they admit their sin. They say, "Chatoni, we have sinned," right? They say, "Vidoy, we spoke about Hashem." So this is not Ba'ene Moshe or Ba'ene Hashem, right? He didn't hear. The people come to Moshe and say, and sort of apologize to him. They say, "We've spoken against you, against Hashem. Please pray to Hashem," and he takes away the nochash. And Moshe prays, but that prayer is not enough. Hashem tells Moshe, "Take one surf, in other words, one snake, one sort of snake, put it on a nice, on a stick, on a kind of a flagpole. Everyone who was bitten will see it and become back healthy. V'chai meaning will be healthy. Chai can mean live, but chai can mean also become healthy. So that's what he does. Next is nechash nechoshes. It doesn't say, Hashem didn't tell him to make it out of copper. Right, some tell to make a snake, obviously means like an image of it, but made it out of copper. It's a nice alliteration. Nachash, nachoshes, lushin lefla, lushin called in Chazal. And he puts it on the stick, a nace is called a stick, right? A flagpole, something that you hang something or some, like here, not a flag, it's like a statue or some image. And if any snake bites someone, they look at it and they become healed. And this is, like I said, something mysterious. What does this mean? What does this happen? Why did Hashem give him this solution? Something mysterious, and also, as I said, we can add all kind of background to understand it, but this is part of the fragmentary nature of these reports. There's something unclear here, something not very fully explained what's going on. Now we have a short report, as I've given this title, Himasois Veshirois. It's a report of, firstly, a travel report, so some fragments of something which we have the full version of in the end of Parshas Maaseh, and in the end of this book, with all their stops, all the traveling in the desert. And it seems like this point of this is to get them from where they were, from Ha'ar, they went to Chasodim, all these places, all the way to the end goal of this chapter, so to speak, or of this part really of the book, is they will arrive at a place called Avos Moav. That's the last stop, that's where the whole, the important last part of the story happens, also Sefer Devarim, all is happening in Avos Moav. So they go first to a place called Oivos, from Oivos they went to a place called Iyei HaAvodim, which is in the desert on the face of Moav, from the east of Moav. And then they go to a place called Nachal Zored, then they come to a place called Ever Arnon, which is in the desert, going out of the border of Emoiri, because Arnon, so Arnon is a river, a famous river, in what's called Transjordan, the other side of the Yarden, and where Moav is. And that river was the border of Moav, between Amoav and Amori. Amori is one of the seven nations of Canaan. So they went there, and apparently there's something going on with these borders, right? Some of the people they have a good relationship with, some of them they don't. And over here, there is a poem or a fragment of a poem quoted. Al Kenya Umma Beseifel Mechamas Hashem. So now we can get to this place called Arnon. There's a fragment of a poem said, and then the poem is given a location. It said, Seifel Mechamas Hashem. So apparently there was a book or a poem, maybe an oral poem called Sefer Mechamas Hashem, and the Sefer Mechamas Hashem has some like epic poetry about the wars and the conquests and the challenges that people had on their way in Eretz Yisrael. And it says like this: Es vahev besufa ve'es ha'cholim anon. I think the most literal translation of this is: these are names of places. Vahev sufa. The rivers Arna, so these are apparently places or maybe names for the same place. V'eshdan chole means something like the delta of these rivers, which go to Ar, not to Leshevasa, they tend towards Ar, so Ar is famously one of the cities of Moav. V'nish anik v'lmoav and goes to the border of Moav. And there, there was also the Be'er. So here's the first time we have this concept of a Be'er. Of course, one of the big problems of the desert, that there's no water. We had the stories twice, right over here, last chapter, and Sefer Shemos of Moshe hitting a rock and making it into a bar, but it's not called a ba'er. Here's the first time where there's a ba'er, and of course, the most literal meaning would be something like, over there in that area, they found some kind of well. Asher Omer Hashem leMoshe, Soifas Om Vet leMoim. Hashem told Moshe, gathered people, now we'll give them water. This might mean the water, the well in the sense of became a well, but it was really what the rock that Moshe made into a well, or it's just a well that Moshe somehow dug or discovered there. We remember the stories of the digging of the wells in Sefer Bereshis. It's a big deal when you find a well in the desert or in places that are close to the desert where it's hard to find. So that's part of the story. And it quotes another song. It says, "Oh, this Yisrael, this is when the Yisrael sang this shira." So apparently, there was a shira that is known later. Also, there's this shira, like we discussed, or we didn't, in Shira Sayam. "Oh, this Yisrael, Moshe of Yisrael, this is when they first sang this song." But of course, we still sing it. It's a song that's repeated or sung later. And the same way, there was a song about the Be'er. The song goes, "Ali Be'er Anula, rise." Well, and answer to her. So they're sort of singing to this well, or about this well, or about this great accomplishment that they found well. And they say, the princes of the of us, or Nedive Am, which is another word for princes, have dug it. The lawgivers, or the people who are digging. Mechoykek can mean someone who digs or makes a ditch, or a kind of digging in the earth or in something, with their sticks. So there's some play on words with the sticks. Of course, we discussed where Yashevet, Anasi, someone who has a stick, but this stick can be also said as like the stick that sort of like digs in the earth and makes a be'er and finds water. So that's the important thing, how they find water. And now we go back to, this also seems to be written poetically, but it's also description of more masois, more travels and stops. They go from Midbar to Matana, to Nachliel, to Bamois, to the final stop, which is Ageh Shebestei Moav, the valley in the fields of Moav, Roshesha Pisgah, with the head of this mountain called Pisgah, V'nishkof al Pnei Hashim, which from which you can see the Pnei Hashim and the entire valley, or the entire state, straight, the plains, Kli Hashimain, over there. It might be also a proper name or also just means the plains. And that's, as I said, that's the last place where they're going to. That's this poem is describing this like last few chapters, the last few stops where they get to there. But we still have two more important short reports of wars in this chapter, and we have to talk about them quickly. So similarly to, so we're reading here about three, this and the previous chapter, three important wars that Moshe led, not wars or attempted wars, that Moshe led with three different nations around Israel. The first was Edom, which they've sent a message and didn't let them go through, so they passed by him. Then there was another one, the same thing, they sent Malachim, they sent Shlichim, they sent messengers to Sihon, the king of Amori. So we've heard of Moav and Amori, right? Amori is the one on the other side of the Arnon. And they ask him the same thing, we're going to go, we're not going to drink your water, we're not going to go into your fields, into your vineyards, we'll go in Derech HaMelech, in your highway. And Sihon did not allow them to pass by, unlike Edom, which didn't let them pass by and came across to them, came towards them with his army and the people, the Bnei Yisrael passed, sort of lost or not retreated. For Sihon, they did not retreat. So Sihon comes to the place called Yahatza, he fights with the Edom there, and they fight him back, they kill him by the sword, and they take his land, they conquer his land from the Arna until the Yabbok. There's the two rivers, or the two limits of Sihon's land, Eretz HaMori, all the way till Bnei Ammon. So on the other side, apparently, or maybe where the Yabbok is, there's the limit, where, or the boundary there. Border of Bnei Ammon, that's Az, that's strongly defended, they couldn't take that, but they took all of the land of Sihon, which is from Arna to Yabbok. So they took all these cities, and they sat in all these cities, known as Cheshbon, and all the daughter cities of Cheshbon, like the cities around it, and cities and like their suburbs, not suburbs, those days was not suburbs, but the like other cities, Cheshbon was sort of their like head city, and the other cities called their daughters, they were all taken by the people, and this, plus it gives some historical note, Cheshbon was the city of Sihon, although it was originally his land, originally it was belonged to Melech Moav, because this whole area is called Arves Moav, or the area of Moav. Plains of Moav, but Sihon has fought a war with the first king of Moav and took in his land all the way until Arnon. And it quotes another poem, Yirmiyahu Moshlim, the poets or the people who say proverbs, have had a poem, and also this poem is very geographical, full of names of cities, of places, and apparently this poem was about Sihon's conquest of Moav. So the Torah is quoting some kind of Sihon poem, some kind of poem that Sihon Melech Amori was singing about, or the Moshlim. We'll see in the next chapters about Bilam, who was one of the Moshlim, one of the ancient poets or prophets that would say poems about the nations around Israel. So similarly, one of these poems was about Sihon's great conquests of Moav, and as it says, Boy Cheshbon, come to Cheshbon, Ir Sihon, the city of Sihon will be built up. A fire came out of Cheshbon, a fire, and there's these doublings of as is common in biblical poetry, a flame from the city of Sihon, it ate the land, the city of Moav called Ar, Baal Ibum is Arnon, it ate also the great, the high places of Arnon, which is again the river that's in Moav. And this poem goes on to say, Oylecha Moav, woe to you, Moav, you've lost, Am Kemosh, people of Kemosh, Kemosh was the name of the god of Moav, their god, their people, or Am Kemosh is another way of saying Moav, is lost, his children are fugitives, his daughters are captives, they're all given to the king, Sihon Melech Amori, and they were also lost, Vaniram, they're either a place called Niram, or it's a word for their kingship, was lost from Cheshbon until Divon, or from Nashmal till Noivach, which is next to Medva. These are all places and cities that Sihon took from Amori, from Moav, and Israel now, Israel conquered from Sihon, therefore sat and is all these places. So that's one more war that we discussed. Now there's even one more very short report of a very short war, a place called Yazer. Doesn't say who lived there, part of Amori, but maybe it also belongs to Sihon, but has a separate report of the war. So Moshe sent spies, Leragel, Meraglim, spies to Yazer and conquered it, Beneseo, the daughter cities of Yazer, and conquered it, took it from the Amori who lived there. One more report, which is the next king, Melech, they turned around, they went through Bashan. Bashan is somewhat higher, more north, so to speak, in the what is now Jordan, Syria, Golan, places like that. And Oig, the king of Bashan, comes and fights with them. It doesn't say that they asked to go through him. Apparently, he just unprovoked, or they were planning to go through him anyways. It's not clear why this war with Oig started. And here, apparently, Moshe was scared, because we have a report of Hashem telling Moshe, don't be afraid, because I've given him and his people and his land in your hands, and do to him what you did to Sichon, the king of Cheshbon. So, in other words, Hashem reminding Moshe, look, you're powerful, you're able to conquer Sichon, you'll be able to conquer Oig in the same way. And that's what they do. They hit him, they destroyed him, his children, his nation, until there was nothing left from him, and they took his land. And that is really the chapter finishes here. But I think we should do, like I said here, one more pasuk. From there, they go to Arves Moav, which is on the other side of the Yarden Erech Me'evim. In other words, from the perspective of the land of Israel, it's on the other side, what we call Transjordan, or the east bank, right? The east bank of the River Jordan. That's their last stop, and there we're going to have the rest of the stories going to play out there. So all of this last two chapters were really condensed and fragmentary reports of the second half, so to speak, of the journey of the people in the desert. And that's what the end of chapter 21.